Hello, beautiful. And what I really want to know is, what is good in your life today? I'm Kia, and this is the Female Veterans Podcast. And I am so excited because I have someone who really inspired me along my journey with me today. Her name is Amanda Huffman, and you may know her from the Women of the Military podcast, which is an incredible podcast. And I didn't know about it until I was at London Real Academy and I was learning my podcasting course, and they said, do competitor research. So I had to deep dive into what other military podcasts were out there, and specifically for women. And the only one that I could find was Amanda's. So it is actually, for me, a high honor to have her present on the Female Veterans Podcast. As you know, with female veterans, there's no competition. We're all working towards the same goal to spread awareness and break down barriers. And so I have goosebumps because I just can't wait to share her story with you. So thank you so much for coming, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Oh, girl, I am too. I'm so excited to have you here. So I'm going to jump right into it, and I'm going to ask you, what made you join the military?
September 11th was kind of like a pivotal moment. I didn't join the military until 2007, so it's not like it was like the next day. It kind of shows how I'm an introvert. But I didn't know really that the military existed before September 11th. I feel really dumb every time I tell people that. But I was in a small town and we didn't have really like any military exposure. I didn't have any military history in my family besides like people serving during wars. And I just kind of thought that the military used to be there like for World War II. And I didn't realize that they were like always there. And I grew up, I was in kindergarten when the Gulf War happened. So I kind of didn't, I grew up my whole life not really like experiencing war, being sheltered from that. And so when September 11th happened and there was like this response force that was like ready to go, I was like, what? The military? And it kind of started rotating in the back of my mind. And then a bunch of my friends were enlisting. And one of my friends was doing the Reserve Officer Training Corps program. And so he invited me to go to the open house. And so I checked that out. And then I fell in love with the program where you can go to school, and then work to get your degree and also work to become an officer in the military. And I just loved it. And that's how I became an officer in the Air Force.
That's amazing. So then you went to field school, field training?
Field training, yes.
Yes. So as an officer. And what was that like for you?
Well, field training was between my, well, it should have been between my sophomore and junior year of college. And it was like a wake up of reality. I was so afraid. I don't know what I was afraid of, but I was like so afraid of like, I guess I'm a perfectionist, so I was afraid of like doing something wrong, and it really hindered me from like standing out, because I know in boot camp sometimes it's a lot better to like duck your head and like not be noticed, but in field training you're being an officer and you're actually supposed to do the opposite. You're supposed to stand out and they're supposed to see you like taking risks, and I was just so afraid of like not getting through it that I like was paralyzed by fear. And so I didn't step out until like the third week, and we did this like field exercise, and they needed someone who was like good at organizing the documents, and I was like, I can do it. And then like I took over and I was like, I created this whole system, and like people were like, who is this girl? Because I had been like quiet and hiding in the corner, and then all of a sudden, and that's when I was like, oh. And looking back, I'm like, man, I should have just raised my hand, because that's A, what you're supposed to do, and B, like, what's the worst that can happen? Like, the training environment is a safe place to grow, and I was just so afraid. I just didn't know what I was getting myself into.
I definitely feel that. I in boot camp, I certainly was ducking my head and ducking for cover. Did not want to get recognized, did not want to get noticed. And yet I still did. And I got selected for a special role at all the boot camp graduations, where I actually was like a little hostess for the officers and who were working with, who were performing in the boot camp graduation, where I was making them Kool-Aid and serving them drinks. And that was my job every week in boot camp. So the cool thing about that, though, was after every, they always had cake. And after all the officers were done and everyone was cleared out, they'd be like, okay, you guys can eat the cake. So we were, every week we'd have cake and Kool-Aid in boot camp, which is probably the highlight of my whole boot camp experience, except for the girls that I met and the bonds that were formed there. You know, so it's making me think of the fact that you were in ROTC. And when I don't know if I've ever mentioned this on this podcast, but when I was thinking of going into the military, I was trying to decide whether I wanted to, I would have preferred, I think, because I wanted to go to college. College was just my dream. I wanted that whole campus experience and all of that, but my family couldn't afford it. So, and my mom really wanted me to go to the military. It was very important to her. And so I sort of decided, should I go ROTC or should I enlist? And when I found out that I would owe like almost 12 years afterwards, I just thought at 18, I was just like, no, I can't do it. I can't do, because I wasn't one of the people that were looking at the military like a career. For me, it was all about the GI Bill. It was all about that college education and doing what my mom wanted me to do. I really wasn't a fit for the military, like personality wise and mentally, but somehow I pulled it off. So tell me, what was ROTC like for you?
It's where I met my husband. And it is where I found my friends. It was kind of like I felt really lost most of my life. Like, my parents moved me around to different schools to try and help me get a better education, because we grew up in not the best neighborhood, and so they did like cross transfer programs, and mm-hmm. So I always felt like the new kid, and I stuck out, and I was always trying to just like blend in and like, you know, make friends. But when I joined ROTC, it was like I had these friends who like got me in a way that no one else had. Like, we all had this drive to serve in the military and this connection, and it was like instant. And that's something that I found with like veterans today or people who serve right now. It's like this instant connection, because you have like so many commonalities and just a common drive. And so that was like what I loved about ROTC. I love that it like taught me how to be a leader. It gave me confidence, and it like changed the whole outlook of my life. I grew up in a small town in California and hadn't really been anywhere else. And I got the opportunity to go to San Antonio and learn how to fly an airplane when I was like the end of my first year, and then I went to boot camp my second year, and then my husband commissioned, and we drove to New Mexico and got him, and it was just like every year there was like, you know, stuff building on top of it, and I was learning, and I just really loved the whole program.
That sounds really dope. Yeah, it sounds like a good program. So I've been told before that it can be competitive to get into ROTC. Did you have that experience?
So it is competitive, because it was like the post 9/11 bubble was like dropping off. Mm-hmm. It was becoming, they kind of had like a boom with 9/11, with a lot of people wanting to join. Mm-hmm. And then when I was in the program, it was kind of starting to taper down. And so they were looking for people, but because I was at a school that had a lot of minorities. I was at Fresno State. They had a special program where there were 10 scholarships per year for, you didn't have to be, obviously I'm white, so you didn't have to be a minority, but being at that school afforded the opportunity. So, you know, so I was lucky, because once that happened, we didn't really have to compete, because we didn't actually have like enough people to fill all the scholarships. So there was like a little competition, but it was just between the unit, and they pretty much like they were able to give everyone a scholarship who met the qualifications. And so that's how I was
That's amazing. That's really cool. So after you graduated and you commissioned, what was the next thing that happened?
So the Air Force has, I don't know if they still have it, but they had a second lieutenant school in Alabama. So I drove from California to Alabama by myself and then went to my training for 6 weeks and then drove back to New Mexico to live with my husband, who we had been apart for about a year at that point.
Wow. How did you guys handle that? That's big. So you were long distance for a year.
Yeah. And it was back. We got married during that time. Yeah. It was long distance, like before people had like FaceTime and Skype. I don't think we Skyped. Like we would just every night at like 9 o'clock his time, I would call him and we would talk for like 5 minutes or an hour, just depending on like what was going on. And I don't really remember, like I knew we did that every time, but we didn't have like a lot of different ways to communicate. It was kind
so
of
like, did you guys email? Because email was around then, right? So
yeah,
you guys email or write to each other. It was just like a quick call when you could.
It was just like that call every night, and sometimes it was like for an hour, and then sometimes it was for like if I was out doing something with my friends, it'd be like, oh, I gotta call Michael, and then I would like call him and then be like, I'm hanging out, have a good night's sleep, bye.
Oh, that's sweet. And you guys made it for a year on just a 5 minute to 1 hour phone call every night.
Yeah, I mean, on the weekends I think we talked more, but yeah, it was, we never really, and then we saw each other at like Christmas break and spring break, and but yeah, it's kind of crazy to think about how we stayed together.
No, you guys just must have wanted to, is the bottom line. You want to, you will. So once you finished school and you got to New Mexico, tell me about your active duty experience.
So I was a civil engineer. That's what my degree was, and that was what my job was. And my first assignment was really boring. I was working in the environmental section, and like my main job was to go out if there was like a oil spill on the flight line or like different spills across the base, and I would go and like make sure they cleaned it up correctly. And it was a lot of like waiting for the phone to ring. So as a lieutenant, they had like all the shops in the back because CE does like everything to maintain the base. So there was like the structures troops who like built stuff all around the base, and then the plumbing and electricians and the digger, like I can't remember what they're called, but they had like the front end loaders. And so when I was really bored, I would just go out there and I'd be like, hey, what are you guys doing? And then they'd be like, hey, LT, come with us. And we went and like we would do surveying, or they would teach me like how to do all this crazy stuff. And it was just like, it was really cool, but I mean, my like actual job was really boring and I didn't like it very much, but that was what I did for the first year on active duty. And they also had an air show and I didn't have anything to do. So I was like, I'll volunteer to help. And so I got to help like manage like what the CE team was doing, because the CE lead got promoted to be the mission support lead. And so it was really cool.
So were you in charge of a lot of people?
Not in the environmental section. My next job, I moved into the engineering flight, and I was in charge of like 4 or 5 airmen. Mm-hmm. So not a lot, but a few.
I guess, what was your biggest obstacle that you faced while you were serving?
The whole time?
Yeah.
I would say my deployment to Afghanistan, we had really bad leadership. And then on top of that, we had a lot of team dynamics. Like we were in a war zone, but then there was like all this stuff happening inside the base where people were like backstabbing each other and like causing a lot of drama. Yeah. And causing a lot of drama. And the deployment was really hard, but a lot of my anger and my resentment from the deployment came from like how I was treated by people on my team. And so that was like the biggest struggle that like stayed with me, because I just kind of like forgot about it when I thought I forgot about it. I tried to forget about it when I came home, but I really hadn't dealt with like forgiving them and moving past it. And so like that stayed with me for a long time.
Okay. So this question has two parts. The first part is, as you probably know, since you, I know you've heard my podcast, I didn't serve during wartime. I served prior to 9/11. So it was like the last peacetime we may ever see, right? I used to be really like, not ashamed of that, but like weird because I didn't serve during wartime. But now I'm like really proud of it because I'm like, I don't know if we'll ever see a peacetime again. And it's odd that so many people I served with have PTSD. I'm just going to say that. But anyway, so tell me, what was it like being in a war zone?
It was, so when you first get there, at least for me, when I first got there, like I heard a noise and I was like, oh, what's that? Is it incoming? It was just noises of like either them doing stuff on the range or like a truck driver. I don't know. It was just like noises. But like the first night I didn't think sleep at all. I just like laid in my cot waiting for incoming because I thought that like war was like constantly getting shot at and like constantly getting bombed and like you do get incoming, but well, it depends on when you're deployed because I've talked to some people who had incoming every day and like when I was there they had incoming like maybe once a week but not very often. The FOB that I ended up going to, we never had incoming. We had it one time. But it was like, it was kind of weird because like most of the time it just felt like we were in like this beautiful country because Afghanistan is very beautiful in the mountainous part, which is where I was at. Mm-hmm. And then, but you also had like this danger. So it was kind of like this weird, mix of like a beautiful vacation where you're working like a, like you're working remote in a foreign country, but then also like you would go on missions and like the danger was real and you had to be prepared for whatever would come. So it's kind of weird because it wasn't like constant danger. It was like moments of danger and the rest of the time was really chill. And so it was kind of a interesting experience. So
only someone in the military would be like, that sounds awesome. But I feel like that sounds pretty awesome. Like, I feel like I could have handled that.
Yeah.
That would have been okay. Actually, you know what? Once you're in the military and you're in that environment, I think all of our sisters would agree, you're down for pretty much whatever's coming your way. You're going to handle whatever they throw at you because you really don't have a choice. So you just rise to the occasion and live through the fear and come out the other side of it if that's what the what's necessary to do.
Your body and your mind like make it so like things that maybe would bother you back like home station in the United States like don't bother you because you can't like take that stress. There's like so many different like psychological mechanisms of like getting through a deployment. Like when I first got home, my husband was like, how did you sleep last night? And I was like, what are you talking about? He's like, there were helicopters flying over and da, 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 da. And I was like, oh, that was like a normal night in Afghanistan. Like I just slept through like helicopters and all kinds of stuff because I was, that was normal. And I like my body had adjusted to that's not danger. Just keep sleeping. And so it's wow. Kind of crazy.
Yeah, that is, it is pretty crazy, but I totally get it. I totally get it. And so I guess the second part of my question is, now tell me about the drama that was happening on the base. I want to know everything.
So I was on a provincial reconstruction team, and even though I was in the Air Force, I deployed with the Army, and our team was a mix of Army active duty, Air Force active duty, Army National Guard, and I think Army Reservists, and they mixed us all together, and we came from like all different units, and they were, and then our commander was an Air Force commander, but he was a air battle manager, so he was someone who would be up in the ship, like managing the air battle, and like not managing like a team on the ground.
Got
so it.
It
was kind of like he wasn't a good leader because of a lot of different reasons. Mainly he was a giant jerk. And then there were also civilians because there were a few other air, like we had USAID and Department of State And then there was like this intel team that was there that was civilians, civilian contractors. And so there were like a bunch of different dynamics. And there was this one person on our team who was like always causing trouble and like talking to one person and then talking to another person. And in the end, I did something that really made him mad. I don't really know what it was. I think we were out on a mission and like they were having a meeting and I was like, well, I don't need to go to the meeting because it doesn't have anything to do with engineering. Because it was after that when like he started trying to like take down or like they started spreading rumors about me and the other female that we were deployed with, that we were dumb, that we weren't good engineers, that we weren't doing our job correctly. And the worst part was like people believed the rumors, and like that was I think what hurt the most, because like I was deployed with another female civil engineer and we would alternate every mission, and so every mission we were off base with the security forces guy. And then when these guys start spreading rumors about us, they start believing what he has to say, and it's like we've been on like all these missions together, you know that I'm not, you know, that I'm tough and that I'm like willing to do whatever it takes and I've been working hard. And so that was really hard for him to like spread those rumors and then for people to believe him. And then he would like come back and ask for help from our office. And we were like, are you serious? So yeah, it was just a lot of drama and I got really upset. They actually, my senior NCO like told me I wasn't allowed to read emails that came from him and like one other person. They were like, if you get those emails, we'll read them. You don't need to worry. Cause it really made me so upset. And so I just would delete them when they would come in and then they would tell me like the parts that I needed to know.
Oh my God. That's horrible. So let me just make sure I clearly understand what happened here. There was only you two girls and the rest were guys?
There were like four other girls on our team.
Okay, so you two girls were targeted and gossiped about and rumors were spread, but the other two girls weren't.
No, there were everybody. No, it's a deployment. Everybody has rumors. They were just different rumors.
Yeah. Different. Okay, right. Okay, I meant in this scenario because we all know the base is a small place. And everybody talks, and there's rumors about everybody at some point, one way or another, no matter where you are, peacetime, wartime, mm-hmm. That's the way the base is. So,
especially with females, because yeah, there were like six of us, and there were like 100 other people, and the rest, you know, we were the only females. So,
that's what I was wondering. Were there a lot of other women? Because when I was where I was stationed, there was tons of other women. So, but I often hear stories on the podcast where there was only one woman, or four women, or maybe 10. You know what I mean? And then the dynamics are different. So that's what I was curious about. And so, out of the maybe six of you, this particular run of rumors were about you and the other girl. Okay. And it sounds like it got really, really bad. How long did it go on for?
Well, it was near the end of the deployment. So I think like there was a month of time when like the commander got fired, all those rumors were happening. Yeah, there's more to it. And just a lot of like drama. And it was like a month of time. And we were coming home, and so it happened near the end. I think it happened in like September, and then by October, I was already on my way back to Bagram, the main base that we flew out of, and then I went home November 1st. So it was like the last 4 to 6 weeks of the deployment.
Wow, so that was probably the biggest hurdle you had to face of your whole military career was that last month.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty crazy to go the whole time having a great experience and then right at the end some drama happened.
A little drama going on, but then it like just, you know, all climaxed to that one point. And the girl that I was deployed with, we both had planned on like staying in for 20 years and we were both dual military and we were like, we can do this, da 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 da. And then like that event happened, and with the commander getting fired, that also didn't help because of just it added on to it. But we both like had a conversation after the commander got fired and they started more rumors happen. And we just both decided, we're like, if we had kids and our husbands were home and they're in the military, I couldn't do this. So we both decided we were going to get out after that. Wow. And we didn't want to do another, we don't want to do a deployment with and have to leave kids behind. And we were both at the point of like thinking about starting our families in the next 5 years. So.
Yeah, right on. So that played a major role in your decision to leave the military. That's interesting. I mean, it's not surprising, but it is really interesting that you were considering a career and then that like really just sort of soured the experience. Poor leadership can do that really quickly, just demoralize an entire unit to the point where everyone's getting out, I find.
Yes.
And I hear that a lot. I hear that a lot. I don't even know how some of these people get in positions of power like that. And then, you know, I think that the military ends up ultimately losing a lot of really good people that would have gone on to do amazing things because of that kind of ineffective leadership. Mm-hmm. So, where was your husband? Wait, did he deploy with you or was he stationed somewhere else?
He was in New Mexico, and we had both applied to go and get our master's in Ohio at the Air Force Institute of Technology. And so he got in, and he moved from New Mexico to Ohio, and he left a box of my stuff behind at my friend's house. And so when I came back to New Mexico, like, all my stuff was gone except for the box of stuff that he left behind, and he was in Ohio. So, yeah. He was not deployed, but his life was a little crazy too.
Wow. So wait, so how did that work out? You get home, you like go get your box and you're like, okay, let me, why not take your box with him?
Well, I had to in process back into the base that I was assigned to and then out process to go with him. So I couldn't go to Ohio. I had to go back to New Mexico. And so he left like towels and
He left the care package.
Yeah, he kept, and I was like, oh, he left my nice towels, which after being in Afghanistan, it was like a Christmas present. And so, yeah, he did a really good job of like the box of stuff he left. And then I stayed at my friend's house for about 6 weeks in her spare bedroom. And then I moved to Ohio to be with him. But I had to go back and in process back into the base. And then out process to go to Ohio.
Right. I remember that process. Lots of processing always. So once you got to Ohio, you were still in at this point?
Yes.
So what was the rest of your experience like then?
So
as you were building it out?
So the next job I had was at the headquarters for the Air Force Materiel Command. And it was nothing like either of the two like jobs I had had before, because this was at a headquarters unit. It was like a sea of cubicles, and like all we did was like work on PowerPoint slides and like phone calls and meetings and do all the like managerial stuff and not the hands-on stuff. We never got to go see the outside. We were always inside working on presentations, making stuff to
like corporate America.
And so that was my job when I got pregnant with my son.
So you decided to start your family then?
Yep, we did.
That's awesome. And how long was it before you got out?
I got out when he was 2 months old. So he was born a little late. He was born at 42 weeks. And then I got my 6 weeks of maternity leave, and then I came back. So I guess he was 4 months old. And so I went back, and then I got out when he was 4 months old. Yeah.
Aw, that's really nice. And what was the transition out like for you, especially as a new mom?
It was a train wreck.
Oh, no. What happened?
Oh, it was just really hard to, like, leave the military. Even though I had made the decision that I needed to get out when I was in Afghanistan, it was still hard, especially because it took a few years before we actually, like, started our family. And I think it's easy to forget, like, the reality of how hard I could remember the conversation, but I couldn't really remember, like, the feeling and the frustration. And so, like, I knew that I needed to get out because that's what would be the best choice for our family. But I still was giving up, like, my dream of being in the military and serving for 20 years. And I didn't realize how important that was to me until after I had given that up. And then, you know, being a mom is really hard And my husband had training when my son was 2 months old. And so he left and was gone. And my son, like, stopped sleeping. And, like, I got to be a single parent who was working part time. And, like, it was just, like, all these things that, like, in hindsight, I'm like, maybe all these things at the same time weren't a good idea. But at the time, it seemed like, oh, it's just being a mom, everybody does it. And then it was really challenging for me to let go of myself, and I forgive myself for not being, like, this perfect person. I had, like, these unrealistic expectations that I would never expect anyone else to do, but I expected myself to do. And so it was really hard for me to make that switch.
Yeah. Man, I definitely feel you there. I can imagine. It just sounds like a lot. And, you know, I have two boys also, and they're 9 years apart. So I got to feel like a first-time mom twice in a way. And I had forgotten. I had enough time in between there to forget how hard it is to be a new mom. And I can't imagine working part-time, feeling like a single parent, but you're not one. So that kind of almost adds to it because it makes it a little harder. When you have to be a single mom, you have to come to these terms where it's like, all right, there's no help and it's all on me and I've got this. And there's, like, really no one there, but you had to come to that. But at the same time, knowing that you should have help there, because you're married and you're happily married and you have a partner, a layer of additional, like, emotional turmoil because of that. And on top of everything else. And then so many of us transition out with difficulty, and you're all of a sudden a civilian and everybody talks different, behaves different. They don't have the same camaraderie. They don't have the same connection. That almost weird family and feeling of, you know, going to that job at the military. So there's that piece of it, starting a new job, even part-time with other people, and then just actually being off the base, not to mention little things like civilian clothes, you know what I mean? And trying to take care of a baby on your own and all of those things, probably, I imagine, made it quite difficult for you. And did you feel prepared by the military to re-enter the civilian world?
No.
No.
I felt really frustrated with, like, the transition assistance program because it was so focused on, like, getting a job, and they never talked about the emotional, like, aspect of, like, what you were. So I felt, like, completely blindsided by, like, what was coming. And I was, like, so pissed for a long time because I was like, why were they so focused on us getting a job when they really needed to spend a day saying, hey, you're not going to be in the military and you might have some emotions. I really wish that was part of what TAP was about, because I know the reason they want you to find a job is so you can fill the void of being in the military, but it's still going to be a little bit painful. Because, like you said, it's not the same thing. And I was getting out to be a stay-at-home mom. And so, like, TAP class was useless, but they, like, made me take it. Even though I was 8 months pregnant. And I was like, I don't need this. And they were like, you have to be here.
Yeah, I feel that. I learned more from, I think it was a chief next to me, or a senior master chief, that was sat next to me. And he educated me more in that TAPS class about what was coming for me than the TAPS class did. So I definitely didn't feel prepared. My transition out was pretty difficult too. And that, I think, is the common answer to both of those. Like, no, I didn't feel prepared by the military to re-enter the civilian world. And TAPS class was useless. It's such a common answer. We really got to do something about that, I think. We have to take up that cause. I think it actually contributes to a lot of serious issues that we face as veterans, like suicides and homelessness. And you don't immediately see the connection, but it's there. Because if we were better prepared to leave the military, then maybe some of those situations that arise that lead us down those paths wouldn't happen. Important for us to notice that, you know, there's especially, oh, I love this when you said the emotional aspect of getting out of the military. That's huge. And especially considering that, at least when I was in, it was sort of a stigma to be too emotional or to need to go to mental health services or anything like that, right? So, but we know now, at least I know now, that the emotional aspect of it is so critical and really shouldn't, there should be no stigma associated with it. And it should actually be a component of the exit process, because when you get out, it's like it's culture shock. It's a complete different world. And then you're getting out to be a stay-home mom. So you're suddenly not in uniform anymore. And all of a sudden, you're not in charge of anything anymore except Pampers and bottles and feedings and, you know, nap times and cleaning your house. Right? So it's such a, that's also on another level of culture shock. So how did you get through it?
So I found this blogger, her name was Lisa Jo Baker, and she was doing this 5-minute Friday, and every Friday she'd throw out a word like love or sunshine or whatever, truth, and then you would just write for 5 minutes about whatever the word was, whatever came to your mind, whatever you wanted, no editing, just write. And through writing, I like was able to unpackage like a lot of what was going on in my head that I didn't even like realize was happening. And so I just kept writing, and then I started a blog, and I had no idea what I was doing, and I screwed up a lot. But I found a community of writers who were blogging and writing, and started reading their blogs, and like found that kind of a community like the military, but we were all writers and dreaming of like having a blog where everybody read it. And it was just, I think through those ladies, and it's funny because a lot of them were like in their 50s and 60s, and there was like me and one other lady in our 30s. And so, but those ladies, like I'm still friends with them, and they support me in like what I'm doing today. But it was through like sharing those stories and connecting with them and having that validation of like that I was doing a good job, and that there was a light at the end of the tunnel.
That's beautiful. I love that. And so was the blog what led you into podcasting?
Yes. So, in a long, curvy road.
Okay, so tell me what you can about that.
So I started, and my degree is civil engineering, so I have like no marketing background, but I've always loved writing. And so I started by sharing like my deployment stories, because I had written letters when I was overseas. So I'd written letters home via email, and so I put those on my blog, and then I would write about being a mom. And I like bounced around really struggling to figure out what my niche was and where I needed to focus. And I really thought that I really had this struggle that when I talked about being a veteran, that I was like not enjoying being a mom. Like if I was talking about my service and like what it meant to me, that somehow that meant I hadn't moved past the military, and that I was still stuck in like what I would call the glory days then. And so I was like, I can't write about being in the military because I'm stuck and I'm not moving forward. And what I really needed to do was be like a mom blogger, but I didn't enjoy being a mom blogger. And so then I tried being a travel blogger, and then I decided I would do a 31-day deployment series. And I was expecting to get mainly men to respond to my query of share your deployment, but I actually got almost all women. And it was through hearing their stories that I was like, this is really cool stuff. Like they've deployed, they've done all this cool stuff. Like I never would have even known like all these things women were doing. And like, I had a pretty unique deployment experience because I went on convoys in 2010 when women technically weren't supposed to be in combat. And so I was fascinated by these stories, and I was like, I don't care about the deployment police. I want to hear more women's stories. So that's when I started collecting women's stories. And I was going to do the 31-day series again, and I had most of the stories collected, but we moved from California to Virginia, where we are now. My husband's still in the military, and I just felt overwhelmed. It was September. I had all the stories, but I didn't have any of them in the blog. And I was like telling my friend how overwhelmed I was. And she said, you know, you don't have to do this. Like, the only person who's going to know is you. Well, and me, because you told me, but like, you don't have to torture yourself. Like, maybe just do it in 2019 and do like a weekly series. And then somehow through that conversation, we're like, and then maybe we'll just do a podcast. And so I decided not to do the series and to start a podcast. And so I started collecting stories for the podcast, and I thought I would use the stories that I had done the written interviews. And I was like, how am I going to find women every week to fill out my podcast? So I'll like use these stories for like filler weeks in case I can't get women to be on the podcast. But I didn't have that problem. I have like so many, I have like so many women ready to share their story. And so I decided to take all those stories and make a book. So I have the book, Women of the Military, which is the stories that were going to be the blog series, but now is a book on Amazon. And then I have the Women of the Military podcast, where I share stories. And it's just been so fulfilling and so awesome to find what I need to be doing.
I know the feeling. So I totally vibe with that. And I love your podcast. Everybody should check it out. It's different, but similar. And I love that. And so tell me more about like your guests that you have on the podcast. It was an honor for me to be invited to your podcast. So I was really happy that my episode came out not that long ago, which you can find if you want to hear it. But tell me more about some of your guests. Like, what was the most, I guess all the stories are memorable, but what one impacted you the most?
So I got a chance to interview General Wilma Vaught, and she's 90. She came to my house because technology was like challenging and she had hearing aids. And so the lady that I was coordinating with me from the Women in Military Service Memorial was like, can we just come to your house and do it? And I was like, there's going to be a general sitting at my kitchen table? Like, are you kidding me? And so she was just like so humble. And I loved how she talked about how important it was to take care of her people. I had this like stereotype, like one of the first women generals, I was like, she's probably like so tough and ruthless, but she was like all about taking care of her people. And like, that's what people loved about her. And that was like why she succeeded, because she would come into a unit, she would see everything in disarray. People's EPRs weren't done. No one was getting awards. No one's getting, and she fixed that. And people would say, I was going to transfer out of this unit when I heard a woman was going to be in charge, but I would follow you anywhere. And I was like, that just shows like the power of taking care of your people. She converted people who didn't even want to be in the unit because she was a woman. And so it was just really powerful to hear her story.
I can just imagine. So when I was in Kansas, I got to meet, this would be a WAFE, Women of the Air Force. She served in the 50s. And
are you talking about the WASP or the WAVE?
I think it's the WASP.
The Women of Air Force
Service. Women of the Air Force, that's what it is. It's a WASP. Mm-hmm. I always want to say WAVE because, well, obvious reasons. But she was so cool, this lady. And she didn't want to go on record because she had a story that I won't repeat it because I said that I wouldn't repeat it. But she had an embarrassing situation happen, which I promise you guys, you would be like, that's nothing. But for her and for her time period, she felt mortified because it happened in uniform. So she didn't want to go on record for saying that. And she wanted to share her story with me, but she didn't want to record it. So I got a chance to have an afternoon with her and ask her all these really cool questions, historically speaking, about her time in service. And I want to say it was the 50s.
It was in World War II. If she was a WASP, it was World War II.
Yeah, it was, I think, right at the end time period. Yeah. I want to say she said maybe 1953. I have all these notes, but I didn't think I was going to talk about this, so I didn't bring them with me. Anyway, so it was amazing. So I totally understand how you must have felt sitting there with the general when and I just got to talk with her and hear about, you know, the uniform and her day-to-day and what she experienced. And she really went in depth about the harassment, which was really, I mean, well, you think about the time period and it's a given, you know, about just the way men thought of women at that time. And it's just, but everything that she overcame and her entire experience. And then she met her husband and she got married and she got out. But it was incredible. And she was so cool. We had such a great afternoon. So it was really impressive to hear her story. And I can just imagine how impactful speaking to the general, 90 years old, and at your kitchen table, and a true leader at a time where I can just imagine that the guys were like, I hear stories from female veterans. Alicia's story just came out a couple of episodes ago. It might've been the one before last, actually. And that's season 3, I think episode 9, but she was talking about men taking orders from her. And in fact, Allison, the episode before that one, was talking about the same thing and how difficult, and this was like just a few years ago, where they were having difficulty having men take orders from them without saying they're that girl, or she has a bad attitude, or like they didn't want to take these orders. They didn't like the way she was talking, like some issue, but it all comes down to it being a woman that's giving the orders, right? And now here's your general all these years ago, right? Leading men, and they're talking about some, I'm going to leave the unit. I could just be a fly on the wall and imagine some of the things they were saying, hearing this woman was going to come in and take over, right? And then come to find out, they would just like lay down their lives for her at any given moment. And this just speaks to how strong she was, maybe in a different way. Like you think she's going to be so tough, but she was. She was just tough and strong in a different way that made people just love her. I love that. That's an amazing story. Thank you for sharing that. What episode or what guest can you remember made you feel maybe the most sad?
So I had Ruthie on earlier this year, and she was raped twice while in the military, and her story brought me to tears. She was raped first by her boyfriend, who wouldn't stop when she said no, and then she reported it, and then it was the tape where they got it on record that he had done it, got put by an air conditioning unit, and it got messed up, and he ended up just getting like an LOR or LOE.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like a piece of paper, and that was it. And then the second time was like coming home from her deployment, and she said she forgot to lock her room to the dorm, and she had been drinking, and she forgot to lock, and someone came into her room and raped her, and she didn't report it because the first time had gone so horrible, and like she just had to like live with that. And then a few years later she decided I'm not gonna be weak, so she like started bodybuilding, and she was like the tough sergeant, and like no one's gonna mess with me. And the young lady was having trouble with this guy, and so one of her friends was like, you need to go talk to Sergeant Bowles because she'll take care of you. And at first she was like, well, I'm going to go meet him in the parking lot and threaten him. But then she thought about it and she was like, you know, if I had someone who had advocated for me and made sure the system worked, then my situation wouldn't have been what it was. And so she decided to be an advocate for her. She gave her the choice of like what she was going to do. But she's like, if you report this, I'm going to follow it. I'm going to make sure that it goes. I'm going to talk to my commander. I'll talk to the president. I don't care. But like, I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. And it just was like so powerful to hear how like she took something that was horrible, but then she changed someone else's life. And I was like, it was just amazing to see how she like took such a horrible situation and was able to help someone else and to make that situation. And she said everything worked like exactly like it was supposed to. She reported it, and like she didn't have to do anything. She just kept checking on it, and it was like going. And he lost his job. He was supposed to get a job as a contractor when he left, and he lost that. And like everything went like it was supposed to, and it was just a testament to show how like sometimes bad things happen, but we can use those experiences to help the people behind us. And so I was just moved by her story and how sad it was, but then how she took it and she helped someone else.
And that's beautiful. And you know, on the Female Veterans Podcast, I hear so many MST stories, and they all stick with me. They all stick with me. And because they're all different and they're all horrible in their own way. But I gotta say, my friend Christina, she had a two-part episode last season, in season two. And her story of, she had like a multiple rape, not like a gang rape, but it was more than one person. And they drugged her while she was deployed, and then she was treated horribly afterwards, made to look like a liar, and then after they bullied her and harassed her on the base, wrote her name in the bathroom stalls and her email, and then she was getting like, it was just horrible like that. Then they processed her out of the military, put her out, right, and then denied her benefits. So then when she started getting sick from the burn pits in her lungs, they kept denying and lying about what it was, and then she had to keep fighting to get her discharge overturned. And like, this girl is such a fighter, and she's right now multiple surgeries just to try to stay alive, because at this point she's terminal. And so we had to do her interview twice, because the first time we did the interview, she was really soft-spoken because her trachea is collapsing. So the first time the sound quality wasn't good when I heard it back. When we were doing the interview, I broke down in tears to the point where I had to stop the interview. We both were crying so hard that it was like inaudible. Like, I could not even continue. I had to recollect myself. It was so upsetting hearing that story. And then when I went to play it back, you could hardly hear her. So then we had to do the interview over. And we did the interview a couple months later, and we did it again. And she actually went into more detail about the trauma. And it was just, it was equally as upsetting the second time in a whole new way. But this time, and I still cried. But this time I was more enraged at the system than anything. And I think that one is always going to stick with me. That one is the basis for the screenplay that my brother and I are writing right now. The story about female veterans that we're putting together. Her character is the main character, is based upon her story. And I'll just never forget it. There's not a day goes by that I don't think about Christina. Actually, I should send her a message, because it's been like a couple of weeks since we last had an exchange. But I was planning to go and visit her in August in Florida. Because, you know, she's just got to hold on, right? And she should have been in hospice back in September. And she's still going. So I want to go and see her and meet her in person. And I said, hang out until August, right? Stay well until August, and I'm going to come see you. And now this whole crisis, this whole COVID lockdown is still going on. I mean, hopefully we're towards the end of it, but by now. But I'm hoping that I can travel so I can still go and see her in Florida. And I think the other one, they all stick with me. I mean, I could just go on and on about every single one. The one in the 80s for the LGBTQ community and the persecution that was happening there. That one hasn't come out yet. I'm still working on it. Needed some editing. And I don't usually do a lot of editing, but this one I am, because of the connection was a little off. So it was a bit broken. And then there's another one, one of the stalker ones, where Tara's episode came out last season too, and she was only in for 1 year. And in that 1 year, she was stalked and harassed to the point where she had like a nervous breakdown. And they put her out of the military. And she was so depressed. If it wasn't for her parents, I don't know if she'd even be with us. And the thing that sticks with me, it was the first time I ever got so mad on the podcast that I actually just started snapping in the podcast. I couldn't control how mad I was, because here this girl was 18 and she spent the next 25 years trying to get over it. What happened to her? That's to do that to someone's life is just, and it's reprehensible to me. And so that one sticks out in my mind, because it was the first one where I really got mad. And I usually try to keep my composure and listen to the stories and be supportive. But that one, I really just, it enraged me to think that she had to fight the rest of her life to recognize that she had PTSD, to be willing to say, yes, I was in the military, because she would never even talk about it, never even acknowledge it, to let go of the shame of only having served 1 year and not when she wanted a career. So these stories are so powerful, and I think both of us are really blessed that we get to hear them and share them and bring awareness to the women who serve.
I completely agree. Yeah, there's so many stories where you're just like, are you kidding me? And like, how? Yeah, it's there's good stories, but there's also really bad stories. And like, and the people who get kicked out or don't get to serve their full term, they struggle so much with like, I haven't done enough for my country. And I just found out my friend that I've known for years was in the National Guard when she was in high school, and she got injured at boot camp and ended up getting kicked out of the military for medical reasons. But I was like, how did I not know that you were in? She's like, well, I don't really talk about it because it was only like a year. And I was like, you joined while you were in high school? Like, that's a big freaking deal. That's like,
incredible.
Yeah.
Tell her I said it's incredible.
I will.
Tell her if she wants to come on my podcast, we can talk about it. She's a veteran. Mm-hmm. So anyway, oh my gosh, the hour really just flew by. And it's always fun to talk to you. So before we wrap it up, I have one more question for you. Actually, two. But the first one is, what advice would you have for our veteran sisters coming up behind us that could help them thrive in life?
I think it's so important that we share our stories with other people, because people, they don't know what they don't know. And like, sometimes they're rude and it's annoying, but there's also so many people who are like supporting us. And another thing is to get involved in women veteran organizations, and even like not women, but like normal veteran organizations.
Like, so all veterans.
I think sometimes we get in this like clique of like women veterans, and it's like a really fun place to be a part of. But some of the most healing conversations I've had have been with male veterans, and I'm like, I'm not so weird. Like, sometimes I think you feel like we're aliens, like we don't fit. And then you talk to a male veteran and you're like, oh, you deal with that too? I thought it was just because I was a woman. So to get involved in the veteran community, and just don't think that you're not welcome. If you're not welcome to the group you're at, then just find another one, because you are welcome and you're important and you add so much value.
It's beautiful and very well said. And I could not agree more. I feel like the times that I'm able to help a veteran and to be there for them, which is what I've always done, I didn't even ever think to join an organization. I don't know why I never thought of that, but that other veterans just crossed my path and I would end up helping them, and it helped me. It helped me heal. It helped me recover from a lot of things. And so I always recommend that to other vets. And I say, find a veteran to help. I do work with organizations now too. And it never gets old. It's always beautiful. I always have an amazing experience, male or female veterans. And just, it's always amazing. So that's beautiful advice. Thank you so much for sharing it. And, actually, I thought of another question, if you don't mind. I'm just going to sneak it in before we part ways. You had a lot of drama that ultimately caused you to get out of the military. And you mentioned earlier that it took you time to forgive and you had to go through all this process. And I think we all experience sort of times like that in our life where we have to go through something really horrible with other people and we have to come to a point where we have to heal and forgive. How did you do that?
12-step program called Celebrate Recovery. It's kind of like Al-Anon. I don't know if you've heard of Al-Anon, but instead of it being higher power, it's God is the higher power. And so it's not kind of like shrouded in mystery. It's very, very clear that it's God or Jesus. And so I went through that and I started by showing up and just going to the weekly meetings where just sharing like what I was struggling with and finding other people who were hurting. It was really healing to find that group where I could be myself and like not have to put up this like perfect image. And then I went through the 12-step process. And I feel like the 12th step is to give back to your community. And I think that's what the podcast is for me. And that was part of my journey, was to go through that healing process and then find the podcast.
That's really beautiful. And I hope that helps someone. And what I'll do is I'll find a link for the organization and I'll put it in the show notes so that anyone that is struggling with something and wants a really good Christian-based support system, then they can find that. And maybe what you did can help other people too. So that's really beautiful. And I guess my very last question is, will you tell me where I can find you, everywhere we can find you, if we want to follow your journey?
You can go to my blog, which is airmantomom.com. And then on all the social media, it's airmantomom on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and Twitter, I guess. And you can find my podcast. It's titled Women of the Military. And just go to your favorite podcast app. Or if you go to the blog, airmantomom.com, you can find it there too.
Awesome. So everybody check her out. You will not be disappointed, especially if you enjoyed this conversation, which I'm pretty sure you did because I enjoyed it. Did you enjoy it? Okay. Awesome. You didn't. She nodded.
Oh, yeah.
So it's been such a pleasure to spend this time with you and get to connect and hang out again. And I just always love it. I love your energy. I love everything that you're doing. And to me, you'll always be a pioneer. So thank you for being a part of the Female Veterans Podcast.
Thanks for having me. It was really fun.
Awesome. And with that, I'm going to wrap it up. So I'm going to tell you guys, thank you so much for coming on this journey with me and listening to the podcast every time. The support has been amazing. So thank you, my sisters. And I appreciate you guys. I love you. Love you guys. And I'll talk to you next time.